Trevor Reel 3.
Well, then, when the patrol came back, well, they found nothing. And the poor devils had to spend the night out in the open. I can assure you he wasn't very popular, the poor chap. The Americans, of course, were wearing this parka, and they used to have a very nice fur cap they wore. And they wore their badge of rank on their cap. But to show the difference between the American Army and the British Army, a little story I have is I was went to I Corps headquarters, and the chief of staff there said, would I take him to some other village to see one of our battalions? And I said, certainly. And we got in the back of his staff car and drove along, and he took his hat off. Well, he wasn't a very prepossessing man. He looked more like a Polish hairdresser, or whatever you like to describe him. He wasn't certainly not military-looking. And we arrived along. We went down a broken street in this little village where there was a military policeman, American military policeman. American military policemen are pretty tough. And we'd obviously come down a one-way street for the traffic going north. And he stopped us. And he opened the door and said, what the hell do you think you're doing? And this chap said, we made a mistake. He said, I'm the chief of staff, I Corps. And he said, you're the chief of staff, nothing, and shook him like a rat. And it amused me because I had to try and stop this going on, and prove he was the chief of staff, but without his hat on, you see, he couldn't prove who he was. But I was just thought to myself, this is the thing, it couldn't happen to the British Army, because you would know what a chief of staff looked like. He wouldn't look like that. It's a funny story, that.
Why wouldn't he look like that?
Because a chap in the army wouldn't look like a Polish barber.
He'd have a more military appearance.
Well, he's an extraordinary looking chap. He looked like he wouldn't believe he's an officer at all.
What exactly did he look like?
Well, I can hardly describe him. He looked like a miserable little chap, you know. Couldn't believe he could be an officer of any sort.
You mean undersized?
Undersized and everything else. It's the only thing, it couldn't happen in England. You couldn't reach a rank of that size in the army, I'm sure.
Did you see much of the Korean civilians?
Yes, we did see a bit of them. Of course, they came through in large numbers from North Korea. They were escaping from the communists, and it was tragic to see them. They came without everything they owned, piled on them, with their children. It was depths of winter when they came, and I'm told that some of them broke the ice and drowned their children rather than go on. It was really tragic. I don't know how many, over a million, I believe, moved south, and they were in very dire straits. And it's interesting to know why they should be trying to escape from their own people. They were all coming from North Korea and South Korea, and they're moving south to escape from them. So it didn't say much for communism, because had they been, you know, communists, they'd have joined in with them. I remember I met a few Koreans, and of course all of them were called up in the army, you see, and they raised this enormous force, these ROK divisions, Republic of Korea divisions, which I said were officered by Americans. And
what was their military caliber?
Well, of course, they were very green. Head on.
Yes.
They were very green, and they did their best. But it was rather nice to see them. I remember seeing them doubling past once, going past the double, and seeing the odd two or three girls there, all dressed in uniform, carrying weapons. All mixed, they were all, men and women, all called up, like the same, and not just for duties, but for fighting.
You mentioned the Belgian and American allies, but did you have any contact with or opinion of any of the other nationalities?
Yes, we had, of course, our force, you see, we had an Indian ambulance, absolutely first rate, all Indian, field ambulance. We had the Turks join us at one time, and it was most amusing because the Turkish had a general was being sent. They had a brigade in Korea, and of course the Turks are magnificent soldiers. We've always respected them ever since Gallipoli as being the army, always terrific soldiers, tremendous guts. And of course they attacked in Korea. They had exactly the same tactics. It was the last war they'd ever been in. It was World War I, and so they were quite prepared to attack with a bayonet, and terrified the Chinese to see these people who were. You can't stop Turks when they get going. And we were very, very, very amazed by them and respected them tremendously. I remember we came round to our headquarters, the Turkish general came round, and we entertained him, and we thoroughly enjoyed it. The Americans couldn't understand why we had anything to do with the Turks. And we have, of course, always admired Turks ever since Gallipoli and those days. And the Americans just couldn't understand what made them tick at all.
You've talked about the Chinese enemy, but did you have any contact with the North Korean enemy, or did they just not exist when you were there?
Oh yes, the North Koreans and Chinese were both together, but I don't know how long to differentiate between. It was the real enemy became the Chinese. I mean, they're quite a different caliber to the North Koreans.
In what way? You mean?
Well, I think they're much, much more forceful and much stronger enemy than the North Koreans. And North Koreans, of course, much smaller force. I don't know how many people the Chinese had there. I think they probably had 1 million soldiers there. I don't know what numbers they had there.
What about the equipment which the British forces had in Korea? Did it prove to be satisfactory?
Yes, we had, of course, 3 tonners, and they were not four-wheel drive, and this wasn't very good. And the Americans had a two-tonner four-wheel drive vehicle, which is much more suitable. And of course, it was closed in, and you know, army vehicles were used in the desert and one thing and another, not suitable for a cold climate. The trouble is the Korean climate is it's always bad. You've got this very cold winter, then you've got a wet season, and then you've got a very hot summer, and so it's never nice. I think it's a horrible country, but some people think it's very beautiful. I didn't think it's beautiful. It's very barren hills, rather like, well, the worst part of Wales, these mountains, and that's what we're fighting on.
So you were talking about the performance of your equipment.
Yeah, well, the vehicles, they had a lot of Negro drivers, and they used to bring up any stores you wanted right from the base at Pusan in an overnight convoy, driving at about 40 miles an hour, straight through the night, driven by these Negroes, pulling a one-ton trailer. And so you could order something, be up the next day. And it was very praiseworthy how they were able to do it. Our equipment, I think, was very, very satisfactory. Our weapons were good, and excellent. Our gunners were, again, magnificent. Our 4-inch mortars were very, very good indeed. And our sappers did a wonderful job. Very, very good indeed. In fact, the whole force we had was really a very high standard because it was so well trained. I mean, they'd been through the whole war, World War I, World War II, and they were, anything was wrong with them, they were a little bit old. They were 28 or 30, or even older, and they were all married men, and they were family men, and here they were out in the winter in Korea, and they were just the wrong age. Other than that, they had more experience than any army had ever been, I would think.
Do you think that the fact that they were that kind of age meant that they were less prepared to make sacrifices than younger men?
Well, I wouldn't say that at all. I wouldn't say they're less prepared to. I think they had many, many responsibilities of their own. The worst responsibility was cash. You see, there were no allowances for Korea. And as I said, these married people were suddenly called up and left their wives behind, and there were no special pay, and the pay of a soldier in those days was extremely low. And what about the wife and family? And he's been used to quite high standards by a bit of civil life. He'd probably doing quite well. And suddenly found he'd done, don't know what the pay was, remarkably low. Mind you, he couldn't spend any money in Korea, except when he went on R&R in Japan, and he could spend a bit. But otherwise, everything was free. I know after the war, when we got over, got home, there was a Korean award given, a monetary grant. I think it was £100 or something, but it wasn't anything he was right home about. But compared with, conditions in World War II, where everyone was in the same boat and one wasn't worried about cash, it seemed to me, didn't affect me, but it did affect a lot of people. The financial side of it was alarming.
Would the troops comment on this or grumble to you about it?
Well, I did at the beginning, but one didn't, one really picked up what they thought about things. And they're all working on a time limit, you see. On a time, it had to be relieved after a year. And, of course, towards the end of the year, you were a bit anxious just to finish your time and going into battle and an attack on it. Yes, it's a bit worrying that you wouldn't quite make it. That's the trouble, working on a time limit. You, towards the end of your time, you get a bit conscious of your own safety.
Was there any mixing by the troops with Korean women?
We didn't see any Korean women. We didn't see any to mix with. There were, of course, in the Korean forces, they'd all been called up, the young ones, and they're very attractive in their uniform. I believe they made quite good soldiers. There's no mixing with Korean women. We had a few people we got hold of do laundry for us. That was about the only thing we tried to employ, but we didn't see very many of them, Fred.
So you didn't have any problems with troops using brothels or prostitutes?
No opportunity whatsoever. You see, they were actually on duty the whole time. You're on duty, you're in the position the whole time you were there, you're either that. There's no being pulled out. The only time you were pulled out was possibly you could send people down to Incheon when we started a little leave camp for 3 or 4 days holiday by the sea. That's the only time you got a chance of meeting anyone. There's no chance of that. There was a chance, of course, in Japan, of meeting everything they wanted.
Were there any other incidents that you recollect that we should record?
Well, one amusing story, which is we were, most of the Americans had what they call a trucking company. And a trucking company, you could move a battalion really quickly, or a company really quickly, by these two-ton trucks, which were troop-carrying trucks. And we hadn't got one of these, and we needed one, and so we managed to persuade the Americans to let us have a trucking company. And Lieutenant Sunshine arrived, it really was his name, and said he'd come to report us with his trucking company, he'd come to help us. And we made friends with him, and we used him a lot, and he was terrific. And after about 3 weeks, he lined up one day and said, I'm off, General, to my brigadier. And he said, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. But he went, oh, I've got to be called back to somewhere else. And off he went, and we said goodbye to him. And then about a month later, or maybe earlier, we got a bill from the American forces for hire of trucking company, something like $1 million or something. And oh, this is a bit steep, $1 million. We know in World War I, the French used to hire their trenches to us, but we never thought of hiring a trucking company for the American Army. And we thought we'd try and get them back. After all, we'd fired our shells, supported their attacks with our guns, and we could send a bill in for all the guns we used, but it seemed very amusing. I can't remember what happened. One of the suggestions was, a flippant suggestion was, that we should pay them in the local money, which is a money called won. And the rate of inflation was about 10,000 to a shilling. And we thought we'd pay them in this and ask them to send a trucking company to come and collect it, take the whole company to carry all the money away. But I never discovered what happened in the end. I don't suppose we ever paid. But quite obviously, you see, they had to help the Koreans, because they had to pay for this war in some way or other. And you had to find some way of, you know, getting the economy right. There was terrible inflation, you see. Their own money became valueless overnight. That's one of the troubles about any war the American forces go into, or any other war, because immediately the currency is collapses, and it means you can't use it.
Now, you were brigade major there. What were the main problems in your job?
Well, no problems. I had a first-rate staff, very good. I'd been with them in England, you see. That's my second year as brigade major. I was with my brigadier. I was going to do 3 years with him altogether. And I knew him well. It was my own regiment. And we had a very good staff. We were in, we had a nice vehicle, a command vehicles, fully equipped with radios. The Americans didn't use radios. They had tents, if you please. And they had a tent which they put down in a static headquarters, camouflaged it, and used telephones. And they telephoned to all their positions, hardly ever used the radio at all. Whereas we could, in our truck, just move down the road, move anywhere, camouflage up, and we could go anywhere. They couldn't. And used to have their tent there, and would then, when they wanted to, what they called displace forward or backward, and all this heavy thing went on, moving all the telephone lines, etc. And, of course, they had extraordinary code words. They used to give each battalion a colour, red, blue, and green. And there's a weekly or daily, I can't remember which it was, code name. And you used to get a voice saying, "Is that Honeychild Red? Or is that Honeychild Blue?" And the name of the name was Honeychild. One of the amusing things I do remember was you used to get a wonderful intelligence reports came in, and it's funny meeting. I used to go to the First Corps headquarters or division headquarters. The Americans have been told that the Europeans are so conscious about manners, and believe it or not, you had to have this salutation business. As soon as you went into the tent, there would be these four officers. There'd be the 1, 2, 3, and 4 sitting in a row at a table. Whereas we, of course, were sitting in our command vehicles and well divided up, as we always have been. And these were sitting there in a row, and you had to shake hands and pass the time of day of each one in turn before you could broach your subject, because they were thought or believe it was good manners, and expected Europeans expect you to behave that way, and were never talked to until you've broken sort of the ice, so to speak. And the same thing on the telephone. It was a tedious thing, and I got so tired of saying, "How are you doing? How are you doing? How are you doing?" and asking all the questions about my family life before they'd ask any business. It was most interesting, and I can't believe who taught them or told them. We were not, because we're naturally abrupt. We don't like passing salutations, let alone shaking hands. And there are some people in the British Army who don't shake hands. Anyway, I don't like shaking hands with people. And every time I spoke to them, I had to always shake hands. So interesting little point.
You felt all this made for inefficiency?
What?
You felt that all this made for inefficiency?
No, it didn't make inefficiency at all. Just tedious. It was just a point, no, inefficient at all.
Yep.
The other interesting thing about it is, we have a British Army, as you know, an officer corps, and there's a very big gap between the officer corps and the other ranks, and the NCOs. Now, the extraordinary thing about it was, I went to combat team headquarters, and I'm chatting with these people and asking them about how long they've been in the service and all that sort of thing. And there was only one officer there. they all dressed as officers. They were all actually had ranks of officers. But there was only one, what I call, rel officer. Because of the war, they'd promoted all the people several ranks higher. And in the American Army, you go straight up from other rank to officer in the same line. It's very difficult in the British Army, you know, to change from one to another. There's no difficulty in the American Army, which in many ways is advantageous. And I said to this chap, well, what's your rank? He says, he's dressed as a lieutenant colonel. Oh, he said, major. Sergeant. Oh, I said, well, it's a big jump. Oh, he said, I'm very lucky. I mean, this war shoots me down to the ground. I'm a lieutenant colonel now. And so I thought that was very interesting because it would be impossible to do that in the British Army.
He'd started the Korean War as a sergeant.
That's right. In Japan, probably. You see, they brought the troops in from Japan. We had them all in they had the army of occupation in Japan. And then they brought them in from America as well. And they brought these state troops in from different states, have their own forces. They brought an enormous number of troops who brought into Korea. Rather amusing, we used to get these situation reports, and they were always reporting they had seen camels. Now, the Americans said, oh, we saw 8 camels, and looked as though they were carrying a lot of weapons, and we always seen tanks. And I believe there were very few tanks in North Korea, and these camels I saw just couldn't believe it. And anyway, I came to the conclusion that the Koreans carry all their luggage and their crops and everything they want to carry in what is known as an A-frame. It's shaped like a letter A, and you put it on your back, made of wood, and you pile up on the top of it all what you want to carry. And I'm sure the camels they were seeing were men with A-frames on their back. Because I don't think there are camels in North Korea, or South Korea for that matter. I certainly never saw one myself. Anyway, the big day came when they saw one with two humps. I thought that was taking it a bit far. The other amusing thing they did, which they didn't think was amusing, in their situation report, they said, to quote what I think it said, there was a whole lung, an old Korean, had come into headquarters and reported that while he'd been moving round some area to the north, he'd seen a lot of monkeys being trained to throw grenades. And they thought this was very interesting, that this unit has been trained, and could we find out a special thing we must find out, if there's any truth in the story, and if we could find out more about it, let them know. Well, we thought this is a real American joke, or some naivety of the American army, so we thought we'd pull their leg, and we said, yes, we did have a bit of information. We thought we'd found their command post headquarters. And we gave a map reference of Seoul Zoo.
Who is it who said this?
We did.
No, but who had made the report about the monkeys?
It was an official report, sent in the intelligence report, which we got every week from the army headquarters about the monkeys. I mean, how any monkeys... It's so naive to imagine you could train monkeys to recognize. It's almost unbelievable. But there are wonderful people, Americans. I love them. But I can't believe anyone would make a story up like that.
Maybe they were pulling your leg.
Well, it's an official report. Because there were no... we didn't come across artillery or air attacks. We were able to use our light attack battery for anti-tank roll or direct firing roll. And the Korean War, although it at times was very severe fighting, a lot of it was very static, dull. And I will say the soldiers were excellent, considering the conditions. I know one of the companies, maybe in the whole battalion, they every morning out of their trenches, they'd strip off their shirts and all their clothes off in a bitter cold and shave first thing in the morning. I thought that was quite magnificent. No question about growing beards or anything like that. You know, all that terribly good discipline right through. And I thought that was excellent. Remember the light attack unit? We had them. I remember the brigade commander going to visit them once, and they were put their guns out, had their guns in position. And he said, "Well, don't you camouflage up and camouflage up? What's happened to camouflage and staggering your weapons, your guns?" And the CO was a bit of a comic. Said, he said, we do that in real war. So there you get the view about the Korean War, real war and the unreal war. In many ways it was bitter, yet it was unreal in many other ways.